We would like to take a moment to thank our sponsor, Preborn. When a mother meets her baby on an ultrasound and hears their heartbeat, it's a divine connection, and the majority of the time, she will choose life. But she can't do it without our help. Preborn needs us, the pro-life community, to come alongside her. One ultrasound is just $28. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby, or visit preborn.com.
Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
I love talking about the things of God because of truth and the biblical worldview.
The U.S. Constitution obligates our government to preserve and protect the rights that our founders recognize come from God, our Creator, not our government. I believe that Scripture in the Bible is very clear that God is the one that raised up each of you, and God has allowed us to be brought here to this specific moment in time.
This is Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Good morning. It is Friday, May 31st, and yesterday, May 30th, will be an auspicious day in American history because the Manhattan jury has found Donald Trump guilty on all 34 felony counts. This coming from the Wall Street Journal this morning. Donald Trump became the first former president ever convicted of a crime, with a Manhattan jury finding him guilty Thursday of 34 felonies for falsifying records to cover up hush money paid to a porn star. The historic verdict, stemming from conduct that took place around Trump's remarkable run to the presidency in 2016, could threaten his 2024 bid to return to the White House. Trump can still run, and his poll numbers remained steady during the more than month-long trial, though some voters have said they might be less likely to vote for him if he were convicted. A jury of 5 women and 7 men found the former president guilty of all the counts he faced on the second day only of deliberation. So Trump made a statement immediately after the verdict. This is what he had to say.
This was a disgrace. This was a rigged trial by a conflicted judge who was corrupt. It's a rigged trial, a disgrace. They wouldn't give us a venue change. We were at 5% or 6% in this district, in this area. This was a rigged, disgraceful trial. But the real verdict is going to be November 5th by the people. And they know what happened here, and everybody knows what happened here. You have a Soros-backed DA and the whole thing. We didn't do a thing wrong. I'm a very innocent man, and it's okay. I'm fighting for our country. I'm fighting for our Constitution. Our whole country is being rigged right now. This was done by the Biden administration in order to wound or hurt an opponent, a political opponent. And I think it's just a disgrace. And we'll keep fighting, we'll fight till the end, and we'll win. Because our country's gone to hell. We don't have the same country anymore. We have a divided mess. We're a nation in decline, serious decline. Millions and millions of people pouring into our country right now from prisons and from mental institutions, terrorists, and they're taking over our country. We have a country that's in big trouble. But this was a rigged decision right from day one, with a conflicted judge who should have never been allowed to try this case, never. And we will fight for our Constitution. This is long from over. Thank you very much.
So that was Donald Trump right after the verdict yesterday. And very predictably, immediately, both sides on the GOP side and the Democrat side stuck to their messaging on this. And so the GOP side, of course, is saying that the real verdict coming November 5th, and the left has wasted no time in branding Trump as the convicted felon, and how much the Biden campaign is going to use that line remains to be seen, but they're already using it. So here's what Senator Marsha Blackburn out of Tennessee had to say on the weaponized judicial system. I thought this was a very thoughtful comment. This is Cut 8.
This is the weaponization of our judicial system. The American people saw this start during the Clinton administration. They have watched the Democrats become more bold and more brazen, and now you have this. And it is why so many of my friends who are Democrats and independents say, you know what, we're going to back President Trump. They've never voted for him before, but what they see is weaponization. And they know if you can do this to a former president of the United States, that they can do it to you. Yeah. And what they're wanting to see is a riddance of this, two tiers of justice. So I've stood with President Trump since day one. I'm standing with him again.
That was Marsha Blackburn, senator out of Tennessee. And so a couple of practical responses to the most of the questions that I've gotten from you, the listening audience, because this was predictable. I mean, I don't think that anyone was surprised by this verdict, disappointed, maybe. We thought that the jury, even in Manhattan, might potentially at least be a hung jury and have one holdout. You know, that really excellent movie, 12 Angry Men, if you haven't seen it. Watch the original version, by the way. There are a couple of new iterations, and, you know, some of those are good, too, but the original version is just so great in terms of showing the service that it really is, in the respect for the jury system and a jury of your peers, which is a constitutional guarantee of due process. But that didn't happen in this case, and so it was predictable. Even though, you know, I was watching when the verdict was handed down, and while this was something that I think everyone expected, it was still a moment where you just sit there and think, where has our nation gone that we are actually right here? So we'll talk about the political fallout, but the main two questions are, first, can Donald Trump still run because now he is a convicted felon? And the answer to that is yes, absolutely. Interestingly, he cannot vote for himself now, but he can run. There is no constitutional prohibition that would exclude a convicted felon, whether or not any of the Democrats decide to proffer a constitutional amendment or anything of that nature to try to change the qualifications for president. I'm sure we are going to have a lot of discussion from the talking heads in Washington about all of that. But in terms of the 2024 election, yes, Donald Trump legally, constitutionally can run. So the next question then is, what about jail time? And that is solely within the judge's discretion. So Judge Juan Merchan can, through the statutes that he was convicted, that Donald Trump was convicted on, it was 34 felonies. Each of those carry a potential four-year prison term. There can just be probation. There could be home confinement. There could be a minimum of 1 year and have that aggregated into a potential of 34 years. There is, generally speaking, a principle of the law that you have a concurrence and a paring down of each of the counts together, so that if he would only get a maximum potentially of 4 years, so all of those would run concurrent together. So there is a lot of different potential options here on the table. But even if he gets, you know, 6 months, I mean, we are less than 6 months out from the November election, and practically speaking, it would be very difficult to run a campaign from Rikers Island, and it would be very difficult to even deal with home confinement. If he is sentenced to an ankle monitor or home confinement at Mar-a-Lago, that would, of course, make rallies difficult. That would make him likely have to ask for permission to leave the state to do things like attend the debates. So sentencing will be on July 11th, the judge said yesterday. That is only 4 days before the RNC convention. So with those things that are just the practical legal responses, let's talk about the political fallout of this. And I'm going to take a little bit different position than I think both of the talking heads on and the politicians on both sides, because of course the GOP is saying, you know, this is so rigged, we're outraged, we're shocked, we're appalled, and the Democrats are saying, you know, Trump is a convicted felon and so he can't possibly run and so forth, and it's the black and white, right? Well, we need to be practical, I think, in looking at this. And I think that the GOP needs to have a very serious conversation before the convention about whether they really should continue with a nomination of Donald Trump. And I don't say that because I obviously supported in my personal capacity Governor DeSantis in the primaries. This was, frankly, one of the biggest reasons why I supported him, because if we had a different candidate right now, we wouldn't be in, and you know, by we conservatives, we would have a different view of all of this, and it would not be that the Democrats are winning at a rigged game. And I do think that they are trying to manipulate the rules. This is clearly lawfare. This is weaponization of government. And we could have said all of those things, rightfully and truthfully, but not allowing it to affect the election in the manner that it absolutely does. And remember, this is only the first case. Everybody is saying, well, Trump is going to just win by a landslide. He's going to get in office. He's going to pardon himself. Well, the prevailing legal thought from scholars, because it's never happened that a president has pardoned himself. Nixon, facing impeachment, resigned, and then Gerald Ford came in and pardoned him. So then we didn't have the criminal trial, at least for Nixon, outflowing of Watergate. So we've never been in this position as a country. So if Donald Trump were to be elected and he tried to pardon himself, that likely, I think constitutionally, he could pardon himself as to the federal charges, the Florida case from the DOJ and the DC case from the DOJ. But remember, you still have Georgia, and there are still state issues that he is facing. So this is not going away really anytime soon, and there will consistently and persistently be issues surrounding this. And while, yes, fundraising was huge for Trump last night, there are a lot of people like Marsha Blackburn who I think rightly said, you know, if I wasn't supporting Trump before, I'm supporting him now, and we're going to get a lot of people who are just so frustrated with this, they're going to support Trump now. That's probably true. I'm sure that he will get some people who were on the fence or who weren't going to vote for him that now will. But he's also going to lose some people who were going to vote for him or were maybe on the fence. And now they're saying, well, we haven't really been following the trial. All we see are the headlines and the messaging from the Biden campaign, convicted felon. And I think what a former White House ethics lawyer, Richard Painter, said yesterday on social media is very apt, where he said the GOP should consider a different candidate because Americans just don't vote for a convicted felon. And I think that there is some discussion that should be had from the GOP. Now, whether or not the GOP will decide to do that is anyone's guess. And I'm sure that everyone listening has a lot of very strong opinions on that. And that's fine. That's the entire point, really, of elections. I don't think, as a matter of law, that Trump should have been or now should be excluded from the ballot. Anyone who wants to continue to vote for Trump or wants to continue to say, yes, he should be the GOP nominee, should be able to say that. But I think that this conversation does need to be had because whether you believe the polls or not, there are polls that suggest, and this is, in my opinion, why the Democrats have pursued this case, which is the weakest and was the most ridiculous, the most rife for appellate issues, the most, it was a political judge in a political venue with a politicized jury everything about this was political and weak. And yet the Democrats have been effective in making the Republicans play on their politicized battleground. And wouldn't it have been smarter? Wouldn't it have been smarter to just simply say, you know what? We the GOP decline to play your game. we are going to stand firm for Trump against a weaponized system, but we're going to go ahead and nominate someone else because we refuse to play by your rules that you are twisting in your favor. Why do Republicans always do that? And that's a question for the GOP. I'm not a registered Republican. I'm certainly not suggesting, you know, that we is everyone who listens to this program, but they, the GOP, really do need to consider that question, because if you are more concerned about the fate of Donald Trump than you are the fate of the country, then I would suggest respectfully that as voters and good stewards and good citizens of our country, we need to genuinely be America first. We'll be right back with more.
Rob West of Faith and Finance.
If you've listened any length of time, you're aware that we often underscore the importance of preparing for the future. It's one way for Christians to be good stewards of the resources God has entrusted to us. Well, as you look into the future, I suggest you consider the AFA Foundation in your estate planning. The offerings of the AFA Foundation can help you to shore up permanent income for your retirement years, and at the same time, support the culture-transforming work of the American Family Association. Why not contact Riley Wildman and the team at the AFA Foundation today to see if including the AFA Foundation in your estate plan is right for you. Call 800-326-4543, extension 345. That's 800-326-4543, extension 345. Or visit them online at afafoundation.net.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back, and we are talking about the unprecedented verdict yesterday, and that seems to just be, you know, almost the news of the day every day, dealing with this election and specifically with the Democrats and Donald Trump as well. That unprecedented is just the next iteration of American life now. But there was a guilty verdict of all 34 counts in the Manhattan trial. So joining me now to discuss with his reaction is Orrin McIntyre, our very good friend from The Blaze. And you can read what Orrin writes in The Blaze. He also hosts a podcast there. So, Orrin, good morning. And I want to get your response first to the verdict. I mean, nobody was genuinely shocked or surprised. I think very disappointed. But what was your response to this verdict?
You know, Jenna, I just wrote a book called The Total State, How Liberal Democracies Become Tyrannies. And you spend a couple of years writing something like that because you believe it is what's going on. You're trying to explain a process. You're trying to lay it out for people. But it is a wild thing to see this unfold in real life. You're right that I don't think most people who are paying attention are surprised ultimately at this verdict. But there is still just an awestruck moment when you're like, are these people really willing to shred the rule of law so openly? Are they willing to go ahead and divest every American who's paying attention from the idea that we have neutral institutions that are capable of going ahead and adjudicating differences in a civil society? Obviously, what's happening here is horrific, and it's something that's going to destroy the belief for a lot of people in the idea that the system is functioning properly. If you were any kind of competent elite, you would never take this kind of risk with the social currency that is invested in your institutions that are core to legitimating your rule. And yet we see people so unhinged, so desperately interested in punishing Donald Trump and the people who support him, that they'll throw this all away just so they can tag convicted felon into their, you know, campaign commercials.
Yeah, well said. And I think it even goes further with the Democrats that, you know, they genuinely are trying to tear down our institutions because they don't want the protections and the guardrails that come with self-governance and with our highest rule of law, the U.S. Constitution. And so they are purposefully making the justice system a star chamber and weaponized for political purposes, so that it's no longer meaningful justice. And we're seeing this play out in real time. And, you know, we've seen this throughout history when nations that start well ultimately fall. And, you know, America is a little over 250 years into our experiment. and it's not going well. There are aspects of it certainly that are, but as conservatives, we want to go not back in terms of saying, you know, we'd like the antiquated version of our founding, but we would at least like to continue to press on and preserve the values and the virtues and the morality that was implicit in our nation when we started this experiment. So do you think that that is actually possible looking at where we are currently at in this country and even headed into November?
Well, I think ultimately we're in a position where you're absolutely right that we do want to conserve the way of life and the beliefs and the traditions that were codified in the Constitution, that those things are critical. But ultimately, they rely on a shared belief, a shared morality, a shared moral vision about what the country should be. And if we're going to watch people who are willing to burn those things down and ultimately say, well, we're going to hold ourselves to the standard, but you don't have to because you don't believe it anymore, they're going to win. And I think that's ultimately, unfortunately, what a lot of people are seeing here is we do have to rescue those values. We do have to carry them forward. But in many ways, that means we also have to be willing to go ahead and punish political enemies who are willing to go ahead and destroy those institutions. For the last couple of years or last few decades, really, conservatism has been defined by saying, no matter what you do to us, our principles say we won't do it back to you. And, of course, that works if you have people who ultimately can be guilted into saying, oh, well, we're on the wrong. We've done something that is immoral. We're violating the principles and the honor of our Constitution, and therefore we've been shamed back in the line. But when you have a political party who is openly destroying your history, is openly sneering at the founding fathers, tearing them down, destroying the things that you would be honoring, you can't rely on that shared understanding and that ability to shame them back into moral behavior. And that means that you need to find more aggressive ways to show that there will be a political penalty for overstepping these bounds. You cannot shred these institutions without some kind of consequence. And that's going to be the real question for the right going forward. Do they love the Constitution? Do they love this country enough to say we are willing to exact a price on those that would ultimately destroy it?
Yeah. And even if you can't shame your political opponents into them doing the right thing on their own, this is where institutions that are legitimate, like an independent judiciary, would have compelled by enforcement of legitimate government authority those bad actors into line. And so if we had a judge in Manhattan and a jury in Manhattan that was willing to actually look at the rule of law, and I mean, there were so many terrible things with the instructions. I mean, and this was just one example of a far bigger problem, then the judge would have thrown this out in a motion to dismiss at the beginning anyway, right? And so we would have had institutions and referees and competent adjudicators that are willing to enforce the law and enforce morality, and that becomes a moral and upright society. And so even if we had the bad actors, historically we have had a government that was impartial to an extent, at least the best form of a judiciary that we could, and we continue to make that a more perfect union. We're seeing that as an example, by the way, in the current controversy with Justice Alito and Justice Roberts rightly declining to play politics with the Democrats and say, you know, I'm not going to go to this closed door meeting with just a couple of partisan actors from the Democrat side. That would look like this is no longer an independent judiciary. And he's absolutely right about that and is keeping the integrity of what the Supreme Court is all about. And he's doing that for everyone across the board on the bench, you know, isn't just favoring Alito over, say, Sotomayor or Kagan. But this begs the question, Oren, and I talked about this in the first segment briefly. You know, if we as conservatives are not going to allow the Democrats to set the rules, then if we are serious about exacting the same type of political consequences that are actually legitimate, not just weaponizing the institutions ourselves, wouldn't it make more sense to stand up for America and say, listen, this, yeah, you may have exacted this political consequence on Donald Trump, but we're not going to allow you to affect that across the country. And because we care about America, we're not going to play by those games. and nominate someone else so that the Democrats are set back on their heels and the wind is taken out of their sails and their best gambit suddenly becomes useless.
I think that if you were to nominate someone else, no matter how you feel about Trump, if you were to nominate someone else right now, you would literally tear the Republican Party in half. And ultimately, maybe that is the solution, is the destruction of the controlled opposition of the Republican Party. But to be very clear, that would be the end of the Republican Party as we know it. And I think ultimately, as much as we might revere the idea of a neutral institution and judiciary, it's become very clear that ultimately the Democrats are very uninterested in maintaining that institution. And if we're going to sit around and pretend like ultimately just playing by the rules on our side is going to bring them to the table, I think we're going to be really disappointed. We have to get serious. This is not a joke anymore. And if people are going to continue to hide behind the idea that at some point that, you know, if we just stick to it enough, then eventually the left will come around and understand the superiority of the Constitution and the American way of life, then they just have, you know, they're living in a fantasy land.
Yeah, they don't understand the left. They don't understand the left that is genuinely, there are a lot of people on the left, I'm not saying Democrats as a whole, but a lot of people who are Democrats literally hate this country in terms of what it stands for. They want to tear down the Constitution and the rule of law. I mean, that is, and they've been very explicit about it, that is their end goal, is to reinvent America into a communist, socialist, Marxist nation. They don't want America to thrive under the blessings of liberty. And so, you know, but yet what we're seeing is a bunch of, you know, strongly worded letters and tweets and, you know, all of this stuff coming out of Washington and everybody, oh yeah, you know, we're outraged and everything. Oh, okay. So what happens next? I think that the Republicans in Congress just kind of sat back and watched this sham trial unfold, and now they're still proclaiming their outrage, and they're basically though saying, okay, November 5th is going to be the real verdict, but they're just going to wait till November. I mean, it just seems like the GOP has no real strategy. They're so reactionary and they're not actually looking at what the Democrats are trying to do. And they don't actually have a strategy to seriously combat this weaponization of government.
Yeah, the answers are pretty obvious. You shut down the government. You have strong GOP governors start encouraging their AGs to find any and every legitimate avenue of prosecution against any Democrat, and you go ahead and start applying the screws without mercy, and you go ahead and say, okay, if this is the game we're playing, then I hope you're ready to face jail time for being a part of the Democratic Party. That is the answer here, and nobody wants to hear that, but that's the answer, is you need serious political consequences. You cannot let one party place the primary opponent of their sitting president in jail. That is third world banana republic stuff. If you're going to stand for it, if you're going to sit around and hem and haw and be like, but have you thought about the importance of constitutional norms? I mean, you're going to lose, and you'll deserve to.
Yes, and that can come from, you know, the literal ivory tower that is, you know, the speaker's balcony. Okay, fine, but that's not actually going to affect practical change. And, you know, I said on Salem TV last night on the Salem News Channel that, you know, this is very much like what America faced in World War II with the rise of nuclear armament. And saying, okay, this may be a Cold War and a rush to an arms race, but this is now literally the Democrats that have taken the nuclear option in terms of weaponizing our institutions. And if we do not likewise arm ourselves so that we can all come to a stipulation, a ceasefire, and a way forward that isn't just a compact for mutual destruction, then we are going to allow them to have the nuclear weapons that we either do not possess or are unwilling to actually use. And the only reason that we didn't end up in a literal nuclear battle is because America was willing to say, you know, we've got to have these same weapons and we're willing to use them. And so moving forward, I think you're absolutely right, Orrin, that Republicans need to stop being so spineless. They need to stop just pontificating about, you know, hearkening back to the golden era of the Constitution, because the Democrats just don't believe in that. They don't care. And we need to stop just this rhetoric and all of these media hits on, you know, Fox News and everything, that the Democrats don't care. They're not paying attention. And so we have to move forward. And in just the last couple of minutes I have with you, and I think that's so well said, I want your take also really quickly on this poll from Semaphore. This was a dying empire led by bad people. A poll finds young voters despairing over U.S. politics. Young voters overwhelmingly believe that almost all politicians are corrupt. I'd agree with that. And that the country will end up worse off than when they were born, according to new polling from Democratic firm Blueprint. And the poll said, that, and this was for 18 to 30-year-old registered voters, that 49% agree to some extent that elections in the country don't represent them. There's more to this, and a whopping 65% agreed either strongly or somewhat strongly that nearly all politicians are corrupt and make money from their political power. Only 7% disagreed. This is really sad for Gen Z that's maybe just going to kind of take a hands-off approach when we need all hands on deck.
Yeah, I mean, you sent me that poll before this verdict came down to talk about, and ultimately now, of course, this happened, so it's just the perfect, you know, kind of example, just playing itself out in real life of why people would feel this way. Again, when you have these institutions in which you have vested so much of the identity of your country, and it becomes very clear that they've lost their guiding light, then ultimately when the young people of the country see the way that those are not working, that they're not interested in bettering their lives, they're only interested in opening the borders and shoveling all their money into Ukraine or, you know, some other foreign conflict, when it's very clear that priorities of the ruling class in no way have any connection and to your well-being, and when you realize that the elections in your country can't even seem legitimate because we're literally throwing the participants in jail on manufactured charges, it's pretty hard to find a way to be invested in the political process. And I'll say this, while I do think the political process does still matter, ultimately, it might be a healthy thing for a lot of these people to plug back into communities, to return to a real life, things they can actually take some kind of action on. Don't get me wrong, yes, vote for your local sheriff, make sure that you run for school board, but ultimately you have to be involved in your church, you have to raise godly families, you have to be connected to others in ways that care about them and generate the kind of virtue that can actually allow these institutions to once again flourish. So maybe it's not the worst thing in the world if, you know, people aren't plugged into the day-to-day horse race of politics, as long as they're not spending that time watching Netflix and playing video games and watching football, but instead investing that time back into a community and a way of life that will allow them to once again enjoy the type of liberty that our founders were really hoping for, one that exists in virtuous communities.
Yes, and Abraham Hamilton III, one of my favorite hosts on this radio network, always says, live locally. And that is such wise advice, to be part of our communities, our own families, our local churches. Live locally and see those blessings of liberty and understand that genuine freedom and liberty and self-governance really is only, I mean, I think it's less than a generation away from extinction. But Orrin McIntyre of The Blaze, always appreciate your very thoughtful, insightful, and biblically grounded commentary. So we'll be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning. You've heard a lot about saving babies on this show, and that's because it's important to me personally. And let me just be frank with you, we need to save them. That's why we've partnered with Preborn, the nation's leader in introducing mothers with unplanned pregnancies to their babies. And once she hears that heartbeat and sees that precious life growing inside of her, she is twice as likely to choose life. Now that's a miracle. But quite honestly, if we don't save them, who will? Preborn receives no government funding, so their work is completely dependent on us. Preborn has rescued over 280,000 babies. And that's not all. They provide love, support, and counseling for up to 2 years for free, saving lives and souls. One ultrasound is just $28, or $140, helps to rescue 5 babies' lives. Abortion doesn't stop, so we can't. Together, you and I can save lives. Just dial pound
#250 on your cell and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby. Or go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back, and we are still talking about the verdict that came late yesterday out of Manhattan. And Congressman Bob Good from the great state of Virginia posted this in response. Today's egregious verdict represents the most prominent miscarriage of quote-unquote justice, justice being in air quotes, in modern American history. This corrupt sham of a New York City judicial system demonstrates the extreme danger of placing individuals in power who will abuse that power to accomplish a political objective. This is election interference at the highest level and points directly to unlawful and unconstitutional collusion by Joe Biden and Merrick Garland. This obscene verdict will certainly be overturned on appeal, and that must happen expeditiously. So Congressman Bob Good joins us this morning. And Congressman, I have so much respect for you for posting this and being principled, because just days ago, Donald Trump endorsed your primary opponent, I think, just out of this, you know, perhaps whether you're going to call it revenge or just sour grapes for you endorsing Governor DeSantis in the primary. And, you know, and yet you are doing the principled and the right thing by simply following the Constitution and posting this response as you should. And so, again, I give you a lot of respect for that. But speak to that. Why you are principled instead of just returning sour grapes for sour grapes?
Well, we've got to all be united. Thank you, Jenna. We've got to all be united and doing everything we can to help elect President Trump on November 5. We cannot afford, obviously, four more years of the harm being done to the country, the great harm. Everybody was better off, unless you're an illegal alien. Everybody was better off, you know, 4 years ago under President Trump. And the Biden people, the Democrats, his Department of Injustice, they know that. They know they cannot beat him. That's why they tried to keep him off the ballot. That's why they now have tried to keep him off the campaign trail successfully. Obviously, they kept him tied up in a courtroom. They drained resources and so forth. But the American people know this for what it is, and they're responding. They're going to rally around him. This will obviously be overturned on appeal. This is a corrupt judge, a corrupt court, a corrupt prosecutor, a sham trial. No crime here, no case here. And only under this in New York City with these kind of corrupt individuals could this have happened. But, you know, the time to come together behind our nominee and behind President Trump is upon us. It's great to see, you know, you got Tim Scott, you know, rumored to be a VP candidate. You got Vivek Ramaswamy, rumored to be a cabinet member. Even Governor DeSantis is on some lists that are published as a potential vice presidential candidate. And so we've got to put, you know, whatever, you know, whatever was in the nominating process behind us and all come behind President Trump. I'm going to do everything I can to help him win Virginia and everything I can to help him win November 5, because that's what's best for the country, clearly. And the American people know it. The polls indicate that. And we need to call this out for what it was in this court yesterday.
And so are you concerned at all about the polls that are, I mean, this is clearly why the Democrats have pursued this, this political prosecution so earnestly, is because they want to use this line, convicted felon, in all of their messaging. Are you concerned that that independents, moderates, and, you know, other disaffected GOP will now just say, okay, that's just too much. I can't possibly vote for Donald Trump?
Well, I think we all have reason to be concerned, certainly. That's why we've got to double down and work hard. We can't take anything for granted. While the polls seem to be positive for President Trump, we got to assume we're behind and run and work and fight like we're behind and take nothing for granted. We've got to turn out everybody. We've got to get the red state areas voting percentage-wise like the blue state areas. We've got to get everybody in our churches, everybody in our neighborhoods, everybody in our families and our circles of influence, our friends, our Second Amendment friends who some of whom, you know, they don't vote, and the statistics show, and some of, again, our church friends who don't vote. There's more people who believe the right things and want the right things for our country than are on the other side, but we've got to turn them out. We've got to vote early here in Virginia. I'm in the middle of a primary battle, as you know, but we've got 45 days of voting in Virginia. It ought to be one day, but it's 45 days. So my wife and I, we vote early. We encourage other people to vote early. It's hard to outvote people on one day, one side, when they vote for 45 days. So you fight within the rules of the game while you try to change the rules to what they should be. So we've got to take advantage of early voting. We've got to take advantage of ballot harvesting where that is legal in the states that it is legal. We've got to use every means at our disposal that's within the limits of law, which, of course, the other side does not adhere to. So we can't assume anything. And while, thankfully, this political persecution, this weaponized lawfare so far has rallied people, Republicans, to the president, and that's why he's overwhelmingly won the nomination, and that's why he's overwhelmingly going to be declared the nominee officially in July. And I believe he will win in November, but gosh, we can't take that for granted. And it's time for all Republicans, all moderates, all swing voters, all independents, everybody who loves the country, everybody who wants, you know, wants a secure border, a strong America, who wants, safe streets and safe neighborhoods, and everybody who wants affordable, reliable energy, and everybody wants to be able to buy a home and have, you know, affordable interest rates and affordable groceries and utilities and all those kind of things. Have we not suffered enough under Joe Biden, the Democrats, over the last 4 years? That, gosh, we got to turn out in mass and be like President Trump. And that's the bottom line for the country.
Yeah, I think Joe Biden's messaging should be, you know, the beatings will continue until morale improves. I mean, that's really what he's saying to the American people. But Congressman. Yeah, thanks. And, you know, we'll put that up as, you know, his T-shirts from his campaign. But
slogan, yeah.
Right. And so, you know, speak from a separation of powers and constitutional perspective, because a lot of conservatives have, been voicing frustration that it seems like a lot of Republicans just kind of sat back and watched this trial unfold and watched the verdict come down without any kind of upfront action. I mean, was there anything else in your view that Congress could have done, that the Trump campaign could have done, that the legal team could have done even? I mean, and obviously those are, you know, very different in terms of constitutional prerogative, but specifically Congress, without violating the separation of powers and just watching all of this go down?
Well, I do think there are something. I'll speak to the congressional side where I serve on the House side. And, you know, you're somewhat limited, and I appreciate reading my statement that I put out on this travesty of injustice that took place yesterday. But their elections do have consequences, as the former senator from Arizona said. Not many things I agree with him on that, but I agree with him on that one. And again, when you allow people into power, Joe Biden, who are lawless, if you will, and will do anything to secure and retain power, and then they appoint people like Merrick Garland, who obviously is abusing his position. I mean, he's not even pretending anymore. Just all that's going on with this Democrat Party, this Democrat administration, to trample on constitutional liberties and institutional norms in our country and our foundational principles and so forth, that has consequences. It's difficult. It's because, you know, we can have these hearings and we can expose these members of the administration with their wrongdoing, but then if we want to make criminal referrals out of the House hearings, it goes to the Department of Injustice under Merrick Garland. If you try to impeach, it goes to the Senate. And we're responsible for what we do in the House, and we ought to impeach Garland. We ought to impeach Secretary Ray. We ought to impeach Mayorkas again. We ought to impeach Joe Biden, even though the Senate obviously would not convict them, because we're responsible for what the House does. But do I think there's more we could do? Yes. The Select Committee on the Weaponization could have been bolder over the last year and a half, could have been more strong and more effective, I do believe, and they have been. I do think we could have been more bold even still in some of the hearings that we've had, and more aggressive. Generally, when you don't have the Senate and you certainly don't have the White House, obviously, then you can only really expose it. But what the House also could do, and we talked about impeachment, but we could also defund. And unfortunately, too many Republicans are unwilling to defund the government that's doing the very things that we're talking about. They wouldn't defund Department of Homeland Security, wouldn't defund DOJ, wouldn't defund FBI. Heck, the bill that the Speaker put through, where, you know, half the Republicans voted for the spending bills, gave Mayorkas $3 billion more to bring more illegals into the country unlawfully. It gave $200 million to the FBI for a new headquarters. It fully funded Merrick Garland's Department of Injustice, and it fully funded FBI Director Ray. We couldn't even get the Republicans to join us in cutting the, you know, refusing to fund Biden's IRS expansion and so forth. So we could use the power of the purse more to do that. Now, as you know, the House, we can't pass a law to say, gosh, this trial's illegal, or the January 6th prisoners are all innocent and have to be set free. You can't legislatively usurp judicial power in that sense, or pass laws that declare people innocent or declare trials illegitimate and so forth. But I think we can use the power of the purse, and we could use our hearings more effectively than we certainly have.
Very well said, Representative Bob Good. And so do you think that with this outpouring of support that we've seen in the less than 24 hours since the verdict has come out, I mean, it's just been a little over 12 hours, and you're seeing just, you know, phenomenal support from members of Congress and virtually every Republican on, you know, social media, on all of the networks. Can the Speaker and then also you as the chair of the Freedom Caucus actually use that momentum to accomplish some of these things? Because this isn't over for Donald Trump. There still is a weaponized DOJ. There still is, you know, other things that are going on to maybe defund some of these things and actually accomplish what you're talking about.
Yes, but we Republicans got to stop bringing knives to gunfights. We have to realize, all Republicans, I think the Freedom Caucus certainly does, but we've got to realize we are in a fight, an existential fight for the future of our country and everything we value, everything we hold dear. It really is at stake. Too many Republicans in Washington don't act like they really believe that everything is at stake. They think we can just be benign, moderate, timid and centrist, if you will, and cooperative and show we can govern and get things done. And then the American people just give us control of government just because we're not as bad as the Democrats. And we've got to realize we are in a brawl. We are in a bare knuckle fight for everything. And we've got to be willing to use every tool at our disposal to save the country, to defeat the evil that is the Democrat Party. And the country's got to wake up. And I do think there is a boomerang effect that the Democrats didn't figure, obviously, with persecuting President Trump through these legal means, but also the conviction yesterday, that I think is going to re-energize, motivate good people across the country to not allow this to happen. It's very concerning when this judge comes back, when the sentencing comes back. While I don't have a legal background, certainly not an attorney, there's tremendous power in the hand of a judge and what they can do in terms of sentencing, what they can do in terms of requirements of the defendant during the time of the appeal. I'm certain this will be overturned on appeal. I'm certain justice will ultimately prevail, and President Trump will be, you know, obviously will not be found guilty of something that is not a crime and that he didn't do anything wrong for anyway. But the judge, what could he do in terms of sentencing and holding him, making him serve time potentially between now and then? That's a fear that you have, obviously, because this is obviously a dishonest, corrupt judge, you know, put a gag order on the president, didn't recuse himself when his daughter's raising tens of millions of dollars off fundraising off this trial. So very concerning what could happen, but I do think it's having the opposite effect on the Democrats' attendant on the electorate.
Yeah, and isn't it just, you know, wild that the Democrats are totally fine with, you know, the judge whose daughter has donated so much and, you know, obviously this whole corrupt process, and yet they're going after Justice Alito for his wife flying a flag. I mean, it's so utterly preposterous. And this is where, as well, you know, as a side note, I mean, I am not for at all a code of judicial ethics that Congress would put in place for the Supreme Court, because that only would be weaponized by the Democrats. It wouldn't actually be some sort of, you know, code of judicial ethics. And I think Chief Justice Roberts was very wise in what he had to say about that. But moving forward, in just the last couple of minutes I have with you, Representative Good, and we're always so appreciative when you can come by the program. Do Republicans have the political will to be as bare-knuckled as they need to be? I mean, people like you do, and this is part of the reason Donald Trump is so beloved by a lot of people in the GOP base, is because he's willing to kind of bare-knuckle fight. They see him as someone who will stand up and fight. But a lot of the Republicans seem to just kind of say, well, you know, we're not as bad as Democrats, so please vote for us if you want to.
You know, that's a great question, and unfortunately, I fear that not a sufficient number of Republicans do have that will, that resolve, that toughness, that brutality as it applies to being willing to do whatever it takes to fight, to save the country. Too many of them want to stay in Congress. They want to be reelected. That's their priority. They want to be safe. They want to be careful. Instead of risking everything to save the Republic, which is at risk, and so that's why these primaries are so important, to elect and reelect courageous conservative warriors. You know, it's hard to change Washington with the same people who've been there for 23 or 30 years and for whom the system is working to benefit them, the very system that is destroying the country and hurting the American people. So that's a great question. I hope that number of tough Republicans is growing. I hope we can stiffen the spines on more of them. But we are in a battle for the party. My race, by the way, my race typifies the fight for the heart and soul of the party. My race is about the deep state swamp, the establishment swamp, striking back, spending millions of dark super PAC money to try to make an example of me, to take me out as the chairman of the House Freedom Caucus, to say, hey, don't try to change, don't try to disrupt, don't challenge the status quo, or we will defeat you personally so that nobody does this again. And frankly, I think the people of the 5th District see through this. They're not going to let this seat be bought, and we will win on June 18, 18 days from now.
Well, thank you so much for your time this morning, Congressman Bob Good. We'll be praying for you to continue to stand up firmly in Washington. Thank you for being principled, for leading the Freedom Caucus well, and we always so appreciate your time. And we need to be praying for America. It is the bottom line. I mean, we can all debate, you know, what should happen, what may happen, you know, what the wisest course of action. All of that is good to have all of those conversations. But the bottom line for Christians, for conservatives, is that we have to pray for our country. That God would continue somehow, even though we have largely as a nation turned our back on God, that the Christians would still be able to effectively change hearts and minds and win souls to Christ and be able to turn out and vote and exercise our right as citizens to participate in our government. And we need to pray for the blessings of liberty to persist for the future of our country. You can always reach me and my team at jenna@afr.net. Have a great weekend.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.
We'd like to thank our sponsors, including Preborn. Preborn has rescued over 200,000 babies from abortion, and every day their network clinics rescue 200 babies' lives. Will you join Preborn in loving and supporting young moms in crisis? Save a life today. Go to preborn.com.